Pinkerton, 9 Days That Shook the World and What Comes Next. By James P. Pinkerton on June 5, 2019. A century ago, in 1919, the left-wing American journalist John Reed published 10 Days That Shook the World. Reed's topic was the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, which overthrew the Tsars and established the Soviet state. Reed was a big fan of the communists, as was Hollywood actor Warren Beatty when he portrayed Reed in the 1981 film, Reds. Of course, things move faster these days, and oftentimes in the opposite direction. And so now we can speak of 9 days that shook the world. Those being the three sets of elections, on three continents. Spread 9 days apart, the Australian election results of May 18, the Indian election results, announced on May 23, and the European elections, announced on May 26. By now, the outcomes are well known. The Conservative Nationalist parties won outright in Australia and India, and they ran strongly in the somewhat symbolic European parliamentary elections. In the United Kingdom's balloting, for example, Nigel Farage's Brexit Party won the most seats. So what to make of these elections, in which officials representing nearly 2 billion people were chosen? This author wrote about the Australian election results here, and the Indian results here. And so now, four more takeaways. First, people still tend to identify themselves by their national or religious group, such as Australian, or Hindu, or British. That is, their historical and cultural identity is important to them. They don't wish to see themselves as interchangeable cogs in some globalist supply chain, either of goods or of people. As Americans know, these sturdy sentiments have caused a significant backlash against the two great emblems of globalization, free trade and mass migration. Here's how one leading nationalist, Italy's Matteo Salvini, still glowing from his party's first-place finish in the election to fill the Italian seats in the European Parliament, explained the results. This is the sign of a Europe that is changing. A Europe that is tired of being the slave of strong powers, of the elite, of the financial companies and corporations. Second, and speaking of permanent things, the voters seem to be telling us that they oftentimes treasure old ways more than they seek out new ways. This treasuring of the familiar can become a kind of defense mechanism, even a form of defiance, that can be puzzling, even threatening, to progressives. We might remember, back in 2008, that candidate Barack Obama condescended to the values of rural and small-town folks. They get bitter, they cling to guns or religion. We might further remember that those bitter clingers eventually merged with the deplorables and so became a mighty force. More recently, Salvini was observed clinging to his religion. On May 18, he held up the rosary before a crowd and declared, "Personally, I entrust Italy, my life and your lives to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, whom I'm sure will bring us to victory." One might think that a Catholic invoking Catholic iconography in a Catholic country would be unremarkable. And yet in fact, Salvini's words caused a ruckus in some quarters. Since for decades, the political norm in Italy has been devout secularism. But perhaps that, too, will change. Salvini might be a conservative, and yet still, in his way, he is a radical, in the sense that he is willing to attack the roots of the status quo. He must have known that his invocation of Mary would bring criticism from the curiously left-leaning clerics of the Vatican, who have long opposed him. And in fact, Salvini was duly criticized. He won anyway. Yes, it's a bit strange to think that a Catholic politician would have to overcome the hostility of the Catholic hierarchy, the woke part of it, at least, to declare his faith. And yet we must put this sequence in the category of strange, but true. Now Salvini's victory, along with a victory of like-minded political figures, will give strength to those who seek to uphold traditional permanent things, even if that means that they are dubbed as retrograde reactionaries. Indeed, we're seeing a worldwide movement against those who wish to destroy permanence in favor of faddish political correctness. In that vein, here in the U.S., we might point to a neglected data point from last year's public opinion polling. An NPR/PBS NewsHour/Marist poll found that 52% of Americans said they were against America's becoming more politically correct, while just 36% said they were in favor. As an NPR report admitted, these findings were a warning to Democrats. Another reason, of course, is Britain's trouble over actually implementing Brexit, which will soon lead to Mexit, that is, the exit of Prime Minister Theresa May. Will the next Prime Minister do better? Will he or she achieve Brexit and avoid dislocation, even recession? We'll have to see, and yet in the meantime, while European conservative nationalists wish to change the EU, they don't wish to leave it. Indeed, according to one mega poll of the EU27, that is, the European Union minus Britain, favorable thinking toward the EU in the last 3 years has actually ticked up 9 points. Moreover, a full 80% of EU27 agrees with the statement. What brings European citizens together is more important than what separates them. We might also note that the EU has changed. The biggest change is the political fall of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. The one-time conservative who went rogue and inadvertently touched off the populist explosion with her reckless open borders policies of 2015-6. Merkel is still in office, and yet she's a lame duck, scheduled to retire in 2021. In fact, according to reports, her own party might push her out even sooner. In the meantime, Merkel keeps herself busy blasting Donald Trump at where else? Harvard University. Yet the EU, if not Merkel, has learned a few things. Asylum requests into the EU are down by half in the past 3 years. And illegal entry has virtually disappeared, mostly because Italy has gotten tough on enforcement. So now that the worst of the immigration crisis seems to be over, conservative nationalists are thinking more about reforming the EU, as opposed to exiting from it. One such is France's Marine Le Pen. Her national rally just finished first in her country's balloting, humiliating French President Emmanuel Macron, and now Le Pen calls upon him to resign. Yet even so, Le Pen is not interested in Frexit. As she explained last month, we have made changes in the last 2 years. The situation of isolation that we had in Europe is now over. Referring to the old days, she added, we didn't have much choice. Either we had to submit to the EU, or we had to leave it. That is, when Le Pen and her fellow nationalists were alone in the EU, they wanted out. But now, she continued, we have allies. Similarly, if Europe is going ever to stand up to Russia and China, it will be more effective as a unit. Of course, some will say that such collective defense was the purpose of North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which precedes the EU, and so who knows, maybe the EU will grow to be more appreciative of NATO's successful model of integrated defense, as opposed to the failed model of attempted integrated everything. Fourth, conservative nationalists still have a way to go in their politicking. Yes, they won in Australia and in India. And earlier this year, they also won in Israel. And last year they won in Brazil as well, and yet in the just completed European Parliament elections, the conservative nationalist parties won just 112 seats. That's up from essentially zero a few years ago. And yet still, their total is barely 1/7 of the 751 seats in the chamber. Moreover, just on June 2, Breitbart News noted that the conservative nationalist grouping within the European Parliament will not include Hungary's contingent, and perhaps also, not Britain's. Such coalition challenges might not be insoluble, but they do speak to the continuing challenge of creating a common front across national boundaries. So while it's true that Euro-right-wingers had a good night in the EU elections, Austria's right-wing chancellor, the 31-year-old Sebastian Kurz, was pushed out of power in an intra-coalition struggle. In parliamentary systems, such power struggles happen all the time, and they don't necessarily mean anything come the next election. And yet still, after less than 2 years in office, one young star is no longer rising. Moreover, in one part of Europe, there's the nagging issue of Brexit. As Edward Luce, a correspondent for the arch-globalist Financial Times, pointed out, overlooking Farage's personal triumph, this was actually a bad result for Brexiteers. As Luce observed, the hardcore Brexit parties won a little over 34% of the vote, while the rest of the vote was scattered among anti-Brexit parties or others with an often unclear opinion. As of this writing, the best we can say is that Brexit is still a work in progress. So we can see, the European conservative nationalists have had a huge impact, but they still have much to do. As Salvini said on the night of his party's victory, as of tomorrow, our workload will double. So whether the issue is immigration, or the economy, or security, the ascendant conservative nationalists need to settle in to do the hard work of freedom and sovereignty. Because as the German sociologist Max Weber explained, politics is the slow boring of hard boards. Now, despite brief high hopes about the possibility of an infrastructure breakthrough, It seems that 2019-20 will be given entirely to investigations and elections, as opposed to legislation. In fact, in small d democratic societies, it usually takes more than one election to bring about real change. And so here in America, in Europe, and around the world, conservative nationalists need to gear up for a protracted process. Yes, it's possible to shake the world in 10 days, or even 9 days, but to actually change the world, that takes a good while longer.